This is Radio Superior 1952, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1950s. This is a true story of our past. So step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the evening Gather Round show.
This is the voice from the land of 10,000 beautiful lakes, Tim Michaels speaking for Jack McKenna. It's Wednesday, November 5th, 1952. Lou Martin has the 6 o'clock news, and the election of General Eisenhower, apparently everybody does like Ike. Rapid Ray is in with sporting news, and I've got $5,000 to give away in the Jubilee jackpot.
Have I told you lately what a great guy you are?
You can't play, Lou. Only listeners.
How did you arrange to have management spring for $5,000?
I can't say it on the air. It might get us in trouble. So, ixnay on the Estens Quay?
Suddenly, I feel like prison is in our future.
The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by the 7th Street Supermarket. They've got big news of their own. Aunt Jemima will be at the 7th Street Supermarket in person on Saturday.
I love Aunt Jemima.
Ooh, I love her buttery pancakes drenched in maple syrup with sausages. Now with the 6 o'clock news, here's Lou Martin.
Good evening, Tim, and good listeners. Eisenhower wins in an avalanche while Senator McCarthy triumphs in re-election. We begin our world report from Washington.
This is the nation's capital, Jack Bell reporting. America thundered its liking for Ike today with a crashing avalanche of votes that gave General Dwight D. Eisenhower the presidency, but fell short of guaranteeing him a Republican-controlled Congress. A war-famed general of the wide grin and his running mate, Senator Richard Nixon, buried Governor Adlai Stevenson under a sea-to-sea landslide. It ripped open the once solid South and ended the Democrats' 20-year hold on the White House. Stevenson lost his own state of Illinois and appeared likely to wind up with only 9 Dixie and border states having a total of 89 electoral votes. Eisenhower is leading in 39 states with 429 electoral votes. That's 163 more than the 266 needed for election. But while the voters from New York to California and from Minnesota to Texas liked Ike in emphatic terms, they were less certain it was time for a change in the Congress the Democrats have dominated for the last 4 years. Control of both the House and Senate remain in doubt. Even so, the 62-year-old warrior statesman has a personal mandate from voters matching in volume of that given Herbert Hoover in 1928, the last Republican president. The general's friend and one of his earliest presidential rooters, Senator Henry Cabot Lodge, Jr., conceded defeat by his Democratic opponent, Representative John F. Kennedy, in the Massachusetts senatorial race. On the other hand, Eisenhower's surge helped Senators Joseph McCarthy of Wisconsin and William Jenner of Indiana get reelected, both prime targets for Democratic attack. Eisenhower's victory ends the era of the New Deal and the Fair Deal. It means a clean sweep of the Truman cabinet. There's only conjecture about Eisenhower's new cabinet. Among these are Governor Thomas Dewey of New York, Governor Sherman Adams of New Hampshire, and Foreign Affairs Advisor John Foster Dulles. In Washington, this is Jack Bell.
This is James Marlowe in D.C. General Eisenhower won the presidency for two reasons, one personal, the other political. He was Eisenhower, the hero of D-Day, and the voters were fed up with the Truman administration. The proof of his personal drawing power is the fact that he ran far ahead of his party. His immense popularity and the public confidence in him already established gave him an overwhelming advantage from the start. Governor Stevenson, unknown outside Illinois until his nomination, had to begin his campaign from scratch. But Eisenhower inherited a bundle of issues which the Republicans had been harping on for months or years. That put Stevenson in a defensive position from the start. Republicans made the most of the high taxes, high prices, exposure of crookedness, and flexible ethics in the Truman administration, and the stalemated Korean War. They stimulated more doubt about the administration with their endless charges of communists in government. Since the entire country already had trusted his leadership in other fields for years, Eisenhower's campaign assurances made it easier for them to give him the chance to shepherd them through the minefield we call the world. In D.C., this is James Marlowe.
Kelman Morin here in New York. Dwight D. Eisenhower stood there, solemn and unsmiling, holding a piece of paper in his right hand early today. He looked a little tired. The deep crease that cuts across his nose between the eyes is an unfailing mark of deep feeling. He stared into the hot, blue-white lights pouring down on him and gestured, a small, almost helpless gesture toward the crowd in front of him. It was a long moment before he could speak. The people in the Hotel Commodore's big ballroom were frantic with delight and excitement. The hoarse cries and the shrieking and screaming swelled into a frenzy. Eisenhower tried again. Then, through the din, he began, quote, "I am indeed as humbled as I am proud," end quote. In this moment of supreme victory, there was little expression on his face. The famous flashing smile and the animation were gone. He frowned again. What he had to say was quickly and soberly said. First, he read a telegram of congratulations from Governor Adlai Stevenson, then read his reply. "I thank you for your courteous and generous message. Recognizing the scope of the difficulties that lie ahead, it is clearly necessary that men and women of goodwill of both parties forget the political strife of the past and devote themselves to a single purpose of a better future. This, I believe, they will do." End quote. The storm of applause and excitement burst again. Eisenhower quickly halted it. In New York, Kelman Morin, your reporter.
This is Don Whitehead in Springfield, Illinois. This was a sour and bitter morning after for the legions who followed Governor Adlai Stevenson. The defeated Democratic presidential candidate admitted he felt as Abraham Lincoln once did after losing an election. Like a little boy who had stubbed his toe in the dark but who was too old to cry, he said, "It hurt too much to laugh." Then the crowd became quiet. Stevenson's smile faded. He looked out at the people who had pinned their hopes of victory on him. In a clear and unhurried voice, he told them, quote, "My fellow citizens have made their choice and have elected General Eisenhower and the Republican Party as the instrument of their will for the next 4 years. The people have rendered their verdict, and I gladly accept it. General Eisenhower has been a leader in war. He's been a vigorous and valiant opponent in the campaign, and these qualities will now be dedicated to leading us all through the next 4 years. It is traditionally American to fight hard before an election. It is equally traditional to close ranks as soon as the people have spoken. From the depths of my heart, I thank all of my party and all of those independents and Republicans who supported Senator Sparkman and me," unquote. In Springfield, Illinois, this is Don Whitehead.
Hello, this is Max Jordan in Seoul. Bloody fighting for Triangle Hill and Sniper Ridge flared today in struggle for the Korean Central Front high ground. South Korean troops and pre-dawn sneak attack stabbed within 10 yards of the crest of Triangle Hill, then were pinned down by red Chinese hand grenades and machine gun fire. Five previous Allied attempts to retake the hill have stalled in the same place. Other Republic of Korea troops seized one of the two knobs on an offshoot ridge of Triangle called Jane Russell Hill. Massive artillery and fighter bombers supported the UN attack. Behind tremendous artillery fire from their Chung Mountain Redoubt, Chinese communists dented the South Korean line on the crest of Sniper Ridge, but the South Koreans counterattacked and hand-to-hand fighting flared at last report. Thousands of American soldiers near the front and behind it listened to a steady stream of U.S. election bulletins beamed by the Armed Forces radio from the United States and Tokyo to 8 stations in Korea. In Seoul, this is Max Jordan.
KUWS Radio News Time is 6:08. Tim Michaels has this message from the 7th Street Supermarket.
If you want to simplify your shopping, now is the time to save at 7th Street Supermarket at 7th and Superior. And guess what? In person, Saturday, November the 8th, it's Aunt Jemima. That's right, Aunt Jemima in person at 7th Street Supermarket. Come in and taste her delicious pancakes. She also has Aunt Jemima pancake flour for 45 cents, buckwheat 47 cents, Quaker oats 35 cents, Quaker oat mix only 35 cents, plus other great specials. They've got Hilux on sale for 43 cents, Heinz ketchup 23 cents, Kraft Miracle Whip 53 cents, Hormel Spam 43 cents, Kraft Parquet Margarine 45 cents, and don't forget Always Easy Parking at Aunt Jemima in person, Saturday, November 8th, beginning at 10 a.m. Come in and meet her at 7th Street Market in Superior. Boy, I hope they have lots of free samples of pancakes and syrup and lots of butter.
I kind of like to get my picture taken with Aunt Jemima.
You know, say, I'd like that too.
If you're going to have your picture taken, bring a bib.
A good idea.
Republicans triumph all over Wisconsin. Capitol reporter John Powell has more from Madison.
Governor Walter J. Kohler Jr. was elected by the greatest vote ever given a chief executive. Wisconsin voters also returned to the U.S. Senate for a second term, Joseph McCarthy of Appleton. He won 64 of 72 counties from Democrat Thomas Fairchild, but didn't get as many votes as General Eisenhower or Governor Kohler. The 45-year-old son of a former governor who made his first bid for a state office 2 years ago led the entire Republican ticket. Kohler completely swamped his Democratic rival, Assemblyman William Proxmire of Madison, who conceded the election with less than half of the votes counted and sent his congratulations. Kohler's father served one term as governor from 1929 to 1930. In the aftermath of a bitter campaign, the usual post-election expressions of good wishes from the losers were missing. At Verona, Fairchild refused to concede McCarthy's victory until well into the morning, and at Madison, State Democratic Chairman James Doyle said to McCarthy, quote, "war unto the death," unquote. In a prepared statement issued at Appleton, McCarthy said, quote, "we must build a prosperity upon peace, not upon war. We must be careful to maintain whatever social advances have been made in the last 20 years, keeping in mind that there have been good Democrats and some good Democratic ideas. As we supplant the Truman administration, it must be done without bitterness and rancor. We can and must and will recreate a government of, by, and for all of the people," end quote. Wisconsin Republicans scored a smashing victory in their bid to keep control of the state Senate. In 13 contests outside of Milwaukee, only Senator Gaylord Nelson of Madison kept his seat. In Madison, this is John Powell speaking.
Wisconsin's 10-man congressional delegation will have the same political makeup as before, 9 Republicans and 1 Democrat. The only newcomer appears to be State Senator Melvin Laird of Marshfield. He's a Republican who's taking the seat of Congressman Murray, who died in office. Douglas County also has a new sheriff, while voters return Congressman Alvin Okonski to office. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has the local election results.
Superior and Douglas County voters elected a new sheriff last night, gave the 10th District Congressman a good margin win, and returned other county officers to their seats. Seeking the sheriff's post on the Democratic ticket, Tony Genda defeated the present sheriff, Elton Eckroth, 8,226 to 7,012. Arthur Sedin tallied 3,100 votes and Robert Yenda, 1,800 votes. Superior has a new assemblyman. Democrat Reno Perala beat City Council President Clyde Thomas, and Republican Lawrence Hagan was elected to the assembly by defeating Attorney John Tykola of Maple. Douglas County voters went against the state trend in casting Democratic ballots for president. The county gave Governor Stevenson 11,500 votes against 9,673 for General Eisenhower. Republican 10th District Congressman Alvin E. Okonski. Top Democrat Roland Cannonberg, 11,000 to 8,000 in Douglas County. And county voters favored Democrat Thomas Fairchild when they gave him 12,000 tallies over 8,000 for Senator Joseph McCarthy. The incumbent coroner, William Downs, was given 12,000 votes and challenger Harry Dingwall, 5,196. Lou?
By a margin of just 31 votes, Ashland turned down the movement to change the city manager-council form of government back to mayor-council. The city manager government was voted in 4 years ago in 1948. With only 2 contests for county offices in Bayfield County, interest centered on state and national contests. Grandview Republican Vic Wallen retained his seat in the state assembly, defeating Bayfield Democrat Rudolph Anich. Washburn Republican Alvin Bratley was reelected as Bayfield County coroner. Former Congressman Barney Gehrman of Mellon will serve another term in the assembly. And finally, Tim and good listeners, let's go back in time 40 years ago to 1912. Republican candidates Kerry Douglas County elected were Congressman L.L. Lenroot, Assemblyman Ray Nye, Sheriff Gus Carlson, and Coroner Z.A. Downs.
Say, didn't you used to babysit those guys?
I'm not that old.
Right after you got back from serving in the Civil War?
I'm not that old.
Newsman Lou Martin, ladies and gents.
Who is unreditable today because I'm happy the election is finally over with.
Unreditable? Well, we'll see when you get to my Jubilee Jackpot contest. But first, The forecast for this Wednesday, November the 5th, 1952, clear and colder tonight and tomorrow with snow flurries. Look for a low of 22 and a high tomorrow of 33. Well, it's time for the cream of the crop from the top of the pot from the stack at the back of the wax. It's time to kick off with the Teen Queens and Eddie My Love on the Martin and McKenna Contest Show. Teen Queens and Eddie My Love on Station KUWS. You know, the most modern table and chairs for your kitchen are now on sale at Lurie's Furniture in Superior. Now the same glamorous keen chrome dinettes you see in Life magazine are on sale for the spectacularly low price of $108. This jet-age chrome dinette includes six vinyl plastic upholstery chairs with colorful plastic tabletops. Just a damp cloth and your table is sparkling clean. Keen chrome dinettes, starting at $108 at Lurie Furniture, 1208 Tower Avenue in Superior. We have a letter to the editor coming up next.
We don't have an editor.
Oh, well, I'm sure it's going to be interesting.
And you don't even know what it's about.
First, here's Perry Como and Papa Loves Mambo on the Martin and McKenna Contest Show.
Papa loves Mambo, Mama loves Mambo. Look at him sway with it, getting so gay with it, shout no lay with it, wow. Papa loves Mambo,
Papa loves Mambo,
Mama loves Mambo,
Mama loves Mambo.
Papa does great with it, swings like a gate with it, he loses weight with it, now he goes to, she goes fro, he goes fast, she goes slow, he goes left,
and she goes right.
Papa's looking for Mama, but Mama is nowhere in sight.
Papa loves Mambo, Mama loves Mambo. Having a fling again, younger than spring again, feeling that zing again, wow. Papa loves Mambo,
Papa loves Mambo,
Mama loves Mambo,
Mama loves Mambo.
Don't play the rumba and don't play the samba, 'cause Papa loves Mambo tonight. He goes slow, he goes left, and she goes right.
Papa's looking for Mama, but Mama is nowhere in sight.
Perry Como and Papa Loves Mambo on station KUWS. Now, newsman Lou Martin with Mr. WMS of Superior.
The guy's only giving his initials?
I gotta write you his initials. What I got to say is pretty controversial, and land sakes, you never know, do you?
No, you don't. You can never be too careful. Lots of weirdos out there.
I think we've had more weirdos in here than there are out there. Go ahead, Mr. WMS.
That's yes. Not what you said.
Says you.
That's what I said. Go ahead.
I would like to call attention to something about the election day in Superior. I couldn't find my polling place. I drove around so much I got dizzy. Then I saw Oscar Carlson, so I pulled over and said, "Hey, Oscar. Oscar, good to see you." And then I wondered if he knew where I could go to vote. So I said to Oscar, "Oscar, I wonder if you know where I could go to vote." "Well," Oscar says, "go to the church down the street with the American flag on it." Oscar says, "That's how you know it's a polling place." I said to Oscar, "Oscar, I know that, but I hadn't seen any Old Glories flying anywhere, except from a porch in Burt's Bar. Burt's patriotic." Well, he, meaning Oscar, not Burt, pointed it out, and I found out when I voted after all. I voted for Ike and Dick Nixon. But that flag was so puny.
You don't want to give your name, but you tell us who you voted for?
If it's a question of expense that causes the city to use such a scrawny flag to guide folks like me and you to the polls, I would gladly make a contribution of doing the right thing. Signed, W.M. S.
Thank you, Mr. S.
Anything else, Mr. S?
Anything else?
Matter of fact, yeah. The St. Francis Hospital building is too good a building to be standing idle. I said to Oscar Carlson just yesterday when I was on my way to vote, I said, "Oscar, how about converting the old St. Francis Hospital into a home for the aged?" Oscar said, "Yeah. That'd be a good place for you and me anytime now."
And Lou, too.
I'm not that old.
Thank you, Mr. WMS.
I can't wait to see Oscar. I wonder what he thinks about having his name said over the radio.
Again and again and again.
Rapid Ray is in with the sporting news next, friends. But first, let's hear from this number from Vic Damone and An Affair to Remember on the Martin and McKenna Contest Show.
Is a wondrous thing. time and space. Our love affair, may it always be a flame to burn through eternity. So take
Damone and An Affair to Remember on station KUWS. Well, hiya, Ray.
Hiya, Tim. So, how is this Jubilee jackpot thing going to work? Ever since you said the prize was $5,000, I've had a bunch of new friends calling me about it.
Well, Jack and I haven't worked it all out yet, but I figure it'll be some kind of a telephone thing.
Oh, still working on the fine points, eh, Tim?
You mean you've announced the contest and you don't know how it works yet?
Well, I am changing the name of it. Something better than Jubilee Jackpot. What do you think of Jack's Pot in honor of Jack McKenna's pot?
Fitting.
Jack's Pot can be taken a few different ways. Better introduce me, my friend.
Now, here's Rapid Ray Paulson with the sports.
Thanks, Tim, and good evening, fans. General Dwight D. Eisenhower is perhaps the most sports-minded chief executive in our nation's history. He was a football player at Point, proud that he once tackled the great Jim Thorpe. He took a brief fling at baseball, and today, still at his old playing weight of 173 pounds, he shoots a bang-up game of golf. Golf is the president-elect's game. He's threatened to play 10 days of golf as relaxation after this strenuous campaign. One of his regular playing partners in recent weeks has been Cliff Roberts of Augusta, Georgia, who hosts the famous Masters Tournament in Augusta. Roberts says, "Ike hits a long ball off the tee. He's a very good golfer. Regularly in the 80s. Like every other team in the NBA, the Boston Celtics are stronger this season, but they still have some weaknesses. Coach Arnold Red Auerbach says, "They've added former Kentucky captain Kenny Rollins to their backcourt. He brings speed to the Celts and is a good playmaker with an accurate shot. With Bob Cousy, number 21 Bill Sharman, Bob Donham, Kenny Reeves, Dick Dickey, and Rollins, Auerbach thinks his small man squad compares with any in the league. Easy Ed McCauley is the mainstay at pivot and one of the best in the game. But coach has to find another big guy to give Ed a breather. Five bouts featuring 2 4-rounders, 2 6-rounders, and a 10-round main event are on tap for boxing fans Friday night at the Shrine Auditorium in Duluth. It gets underway at 8:30 p.m. In the main event, ranking featherweight contender Jackie Graves of Austin, Minnesota, takes on Elmo Miller of New York. And, folks, the Clowns and Bearded House of David Five will play tonight in Ashland. Scotch and Soda School of Psychology has been doing a clinical job on the Hippodrome basketballers. The Harlem Clowns and House of David team play at Dodd Gym tonight.
the Satchel Paige of basketball, will be on hand. Original Globetrotter Al Runt Pullins will be there. Runt Pullins started with the first team in 1927. This is Rapid Ray Paulson reminding you that everyone loves a good sport. Timothy?
Jack's Pots is up next.
This could be as good as the Globetrotter.
Let's enjoy the McGuire sisters now, and sincerely, on the Martin and McKenna Contest Show.
I'd appreciate it if you didn't put my name next to Jack's Pot.
Sincerely. Oh, yeah.
The McGuire Sisters, and sincerely on station KUWS, Lou Martin has this news flash.
President Truman today invited President-elect Eisenhower to the White House to discuss Korea. Eisenhower notified Mr. Truman that he still intends to go to Korea in the coming weeks. Eisenhower left for a 10-day vacation in Georgia.
All right. Well, here's the plan now for Jack's Pot.
I'm leaving now, so I can't be implicated in this as an accomplice.
Here are the rules. Number one, I'll pick a lucky number and tell Lou who is trustworthy.
I mean it. Don't get me involved.
Then I'll call a random household at a random time. You have to answer the phone by saying, "Hello, I listen to Jack McKenna. He's the bee's knees." Then, if you answer the telephone...
Wait a sec. People have to answer their telephones all the time with, "I listen to Jack McKenna. He's the bee's knees?"
Yep. And then you have to guess what the lucky number is, too.
That sounds impossible to win.
Well, if it's 5 G's of our hard-earned money...
Our hard-earned money?
Yeah, that was the deal I made with management to let me do Jack's Pot if someone wins. But like you say, it'll be tough to win, and we'll get all the exposure of people answering their phones and bee's knees and stuff.
That's not Jack's Pot. That's crackpot.
Well, that's a wrap, friends. Stay tuned for What's My Line and You Bet Your Life. We'll be back the same time, same place in your radio dial, the good Lord willing, and the bee's knees Doesn't guess our lucky number. For Lou Martin and Ray Paulson, this is Tim Michaels for Jack McKenna wishing one and all good luck with Jack's Pot. Hey, guys, don't worry. We won't lose the money. I'll make the Jack's Pot call at 2 a.m. when people are too groggy to think, and the lucky number will have a decimal point.
Is this legal?
I hear nothing. I know nothing.
I might kick Tim in his bee's knees.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1952, an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Duke Skorich and Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1952 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.